You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 5th of October. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we're going to be chatting with Pietie Radenhuis from Hirenia Capital. He takes us through the key charts for the week ahead. We chat with York Timber CEO Peter van Zyl on results, biological assets, and moving into more traditional cash crops. We'll get details around that. And then Victor Mpunga from Old Mutual on why this tech rally is not like the 1999 tech bubble, which of course ended in tears. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Eskom gets tough with errant municipalities, grabs cash and land. Asia Pacific stocks rise as investors watch Trump's health condition following his COVID-19 diagnosis. Morning markets. U.S. markets were red on Friday. S&P off 1%, NASDAQ off 2.2%. But this morning, futures are now green. Asia certainly green, very green. Sydney up 2.5%, Tokyo up 1.2%. Commodities mixed. We've got oil higher on the back of a presidential ride around the parking lot. PGMs, Platinum Group Metals, red. Gold, 1898. Rand, 1642. Top 40 opening call for a green open, about 0.3% up.
Listen to the live stream of MoneyWeb Now, the same time every weekday. Business, finance, and investment news with Simon Brown. MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
I've got Pietie Radenhuis in studio, founder Hirenia Capital. Pietie, morning. Appreciate your early Monday. Talking charts as we do with you every second week. Now, I suppose kick off with the S&P. 2 weeks ago, it was looking weak. Sometime last week, I know we chatted on the phone and it was like, hey, this thing actually looks like it might go to new highs. And then, of course, President Trump in hospital, that chart looking, I don't know, it's a hard read at this point. But if my bias to it says looking weak again.
Yeah, so it depends on. So I think let's talk about the history a little bit. Obviously, there's been a relatively strong pullback. It's been in excess of 10% from the highs. And then, yes, we spoke about how it was starting to look a bit stronger. It had broken the immediate downtrend. And then if you look at the way that it traded sort of most of last week, it's really gone nowhere. And especially if you look at the cash market, that sort of rally that we've been expecting hasn't happened. So yes, from that perspective, it does look relatively weak. But it's a bit of a mixed picture because momentum-wise, it's starting to point slightly higher. And there's also what could potentially be interpreted as an inverse head and shoulders on the sort of over the last month and a bit worth of price action, if you will. So that could be interpreted very well. I think it's more a story of dollar sort of strength at this stage, the dollar index, and headlines, right? So Trump futures up. You know, we might see strong stocks at the beginning of this week.
Yeah, I take your point. It the market's always driven by headlines, and this perhaps even more than usual. Woolies, a stock, and I got to say, I didn't notice it, but Woolies has had a stormer of a week last week. You point out it's cleared the 200-day, and it just went cruising through, no questions asked. And do you figure moving higher? I mean, what, 43, 47 potentially on the cards here?
Potentially, yes. So there's a number of different things happening simultaneously. It depends, you know, technical analysis, at least from this perspective, can be interpreted in many different ways. But it's sort of a flat top triangle, which could potentially be a bottoming pattern, a longer term bottoming pattern. And what's very important, I think, is a lot of stocks have come down, have recently been reattempting to test the 200-day moving averages. We see that Woolies has managed to get above that. So hopefully this is a bit of a medium-term trend change situation. And if that is the case, then 47 is absolutely on the card within the next couple of months.
And then the other stock I had a glance at is Exxaro. It was going nowhere for like months on end, all the way from June, sort of after those lows of March. It broke lower, kind of rallied, looks like it's had some resistance. Would this be another stock that potentially has got actually downside action for it?
So this is actually one of the stocks that I've decided to, you know, there's a very nice setup, but there's very confusing signals, right? So if you have to sort of create a weighted model as to, you know, these signals count for one, these signals count for one, mm-hmm. and you add it all up, there's no actual trade signal, right? So from a intraday sort of price action perspective, you look at the candle formations and that kind of stuff. Yes, it does look very bearish. We've got a couple of hanging men underneath a – that's a terrible – I realize that sounds bad. But a number of bearish candle formations sort of right underneath the key resistance level. So it does feel as though the market's going to come down. However, if you look at momentum, it's looking – you know, all systems go for a long. So for me, it's just kind of – you know, we've got half the system saying go long, half the system saying go short, so I do nothing. Again, though, however, I think that if we see a considerably stronger dollar this week, we'll probably see Exxaro coming down. So all eyes on the DXY, on the Dixie, because that's really, I think, what's going to be the leader in this market. If we see dollar strength coming through, that's going to be commodity weakness. We might see the Woolies move not work out for the rest mm-hmm. of the week. A little bit of dollar weakness, obviously. You know, would have the opposite effect.
And I suppose the point with that is you know, looking at a chart, sometimes it screams at you one or the other, buy or sell. Sometimes it says, no, hang on a second, actually just wait and see. It's almost a, not necessarily consolidation, but it's undecided, and it will tell you in time.
Yeah, so I mean, at this stage, I think it's probably going to do a relatively strong move. I mean, if you look at the range, it's about 25 Rand that it's, you know, on either end of where it's trading now, either up or down, right? So there might be in the very, very short term a signal in which direction it might want to go. But I don't know if that's worth the risk reward, right? At this stage, there's a great risk reward set up to trade it lower. However, we have very strong bullish momentum. So it's not worth taking that risk, even though the risk reward ratio is, you know, 1 to 3. It's not necessarily good enough to warrant taking the risk of, well, you know, we've got conflicting signals.
Yeah, I hear you on that. And a 25 Rand range sounds chunky, but that's not always necessarily tradable either, particularly when you take risk into account.
Yeah, and, you know, Exxaro is not exactly the most liquid stock in the world. It can gap $5, $10 if there's big news very, very easily.
Yeah, and that can hurt a whole bunch. Pekler Radin has founder Herenia Capital. You find his charts every Sunday afternoon on the website. Appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Trading with York Timber CEO Peter van Zyl, they had results for year-end. June revenue was off 10%, debt down by 100 million. Cash generation coming under significant pressure. Core earnings per share from 8 cents down from a loss of 33. And the big number here is net asset value per share dropped, but down to 9 Rand and 12 cents. Share price 94 cents. Peter, appreciate your time this morning. You were not an essential service during hard lockdown. You did have some limited operations, but essentially York Timber was not operating, I imagine, under level 5 and level 4 of our lockdown back in April, May.
Yes, Simon, and we only were able to start trading from, you know, under level 3 conditions again. But given that we had the ability to trade with some stock we had, although you say cash flow generation was under pressure, but that was the success of York in the past year, is that we managed to use our stock effectively, and we serviced some of those essential services clients overseas. It was a challenge to get our product out through the ports in the beginning, mm-hmm. But luckily we had some success, and it assisted us in allowing us to generate sufficient cash to meet our obligations.
How much of your product do you typically, in a normal year, and of course this has not been a normal year, but in a normal year, how much of your product do you actually export?
Now, from York producers to, there's two main product categories we manufacture. One is the lumber side of the market. Mm-hmm. That's predominantly produced for the local market. And then plywood is an export product. Well, that is suitable for the export markets, and we export, you know, in the last 2 years, more than 50% of our produce we exported.
Okay, I hadn't realized export had become that significant. One of the challenges you hit locally was Brazil essentially dumping into our market, and you point out that, I mean, you know, dumping it below their cost of production. I mean, two questions around that: is that something that government can I don't know, put restrictions? You know, we've seen it in the chicken industry, and is it still happening as we speak?
Simon, unfortunately, you know, to get government to give us that protection takes some time.
Mm-hmm.
We have brought it to their attention, and we're working through the specific channels. The problem is the certification of the product that does come into our markets. What happened with the Brazilians is that they sell their product into the U.S. markets, and there's a certain certification that they have to comply with. We also sell into the U.S. markets, and we also have to comply with that. And some of their product failed. And as that product failed, they had the markets were closed for them, and in a short period of 6 months, you know, the dollar price per cubic meter were trading at $270, $280, even at $325. It dumped overnight to $139 a cubic meter. And that put us really on the back foot. So where we are now is to talk to our the National Building Council and for them to just impose the same SANS 99 standard that's applicable to us, for us producing board for our structural market in South Africa. And it's quite it's very confusing because they put plywood into the same category as your chipboard and MDF product, which is not a structural application. So that change in legislation is underway. It's not yet in place, but there's a lot of pressure, and we get a lot of cooperation from government to put it in place at the moment.
Gotcha. Okay. An intriguing point I did note in your set of results, you say you've identified low-performing farm planting a trial of 40 hectares of high-value agricultural crops. Is this something, I mean, obviously, as you mentioned, very clearly this is a trial, this is a test run, but it's something that York is looking at, and I'm imagining these high-value agri-crops are not timber. You're looking to sort of move, not become a non-timber company, but to bring other different sort of agricultural assets online.
I think, Simon, you started off by stating, you know, the discount of our share price to our NAV. When I talk to investors, it's all about cash generation, dividend payouts. And with York sitting with a tree that grow over a 15 to 20 year cycle, your cash is locked up in that period. And unfortunately, our history always stays with you. And with the 2007-8 fires, you know, you can take 20 years onwards. And so that's when those trees that we were lost during those major fires will only be back in production. So we had to look at alternative revenue streams or abilities to generate cash. I want to make it very clear to our investors that York is a timber company.
Mm-hmm.
This is just an experiment in a way for us to look at some of your low-value agricultural lands. You know, we own over 90,000 hectares, of which we only can use productively 58,000 hectares, given the permits and the requirements of planting plantations in the Mpumalanga region. So there is vacant land that we are looking what we can better utilize it for. But we will align ourselves with the correct partners, with the correct skill set. York will not, we're not all of a sudden changing our scope from being away a very specialized timber company. Our main focus now lies to invest in the engineered wood market. We feel that is the future of construction in the world. If you look at the trends in Europe, in the U.S., even in South America, Brazil, Chile, New Zealand, Australia, most of those countries have moved to the next level of constructing multi-story buildings with what we refer to today as engineered wood, or more specifically, it's called cross-laminated timber. That is still York's main focus and core focus, and we'll still keep on focusing on that. And for that, we signed a agreement with the University of Pretoria, the engineering faculty, or actually the Future Africa faculty, which is a transdisciplinary chair, which will focus in bringing building standards of timber into South Africa. And to ensure that when we go to these markets, that we give confidence to architects and engineers that they can use structural South African-produced pine and these structural applications in multi-story buildings. So we're still excited and very focused on that side of the market.
Yeah, I hear you there, and actually build houses with wood, which much of the rest of the world does. But I like that idea. Just some cash crops, bring some cash flow to that. We'll leave that there. Peter van Zyl, York Timber CEO, appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Trading with Victor Mpunga. He's a research analyst at Old Mutual Wealth Private Client Securities. Victor, morning. Appreciate your time. September, a bit of a wobbly month for tech stocks for the NASDAQ. And a couple of, are we back at 1999 and that sort of bust and then, boom and then bust? You're making the argument that no, we're not. And a couple of points. The first is that really this rally has been driven by earnings, by real cash.
Yeah, morning, Simon. Yeah, no, you're right. I think for a couple of reasons, I think whenever tech starts performing as well as it has, particularly over the year to date, there are some concerns with some investors because 1999, even though it's quite a while back, still at the top of investors' mind. And I think another element that's playing into that is we've had this big dichotomy in the markets where your high growth sectors, which tech is the poster child, they've done very well and the rest of the market hasn't done well. And I think there's that view among investors that at some point you're going to have that switch back to your sectors that are not growing as fast. Whenever you have tech not performing as well, I think the question they raised to say is the start of that switch. And another reason that investors tend to be a bit unsettled about tech at the moment is the argument around the size of tech in the S&P 500 and other market indices. Some investors argue that it's become too big, and that's not right. That's not really a view that we share, and we can go a little bit into that. But I think the confluence of those factors led some investors to become quite nervous in September when tech was selling off a bit.
Yeah, I mean, and you make the point. I mean, in 99, we were sort of in the early days of what has become an amazing 20 years for the tech space. But, tech is so deep into our lives these days. Microsoft has made the comment earlier in the lockdown that, they saw 2 years development happen in sort of those initial 2 months. The big tech stocks these days, they've got agility, they've got absorptive capacity, they've got amazingly strong balance sheets. They're a lot more robust and a lot more able to take the knocks and to try new ideas. I mean, Microsoft's got, Apple as well, I think, in excess of $100 billion cash on their balance sheets.
No, absolutely. I think when people liken the current period and other previous periods, over the last few years to 99, the one thing that people focus on is just valuation alone. Mm-hmm. 99 was expensive, today is also expensive. But with keeping in mind that a couple of other things also happened in 1999, right? For example, just the speed or how quickly tech rose relative to the rest of the market. By some valuation metrics, it took just 2 years for tech to move from normal valuations to the bubble until the first. Whereas today, that outperformance in tech relative to the broader market has been playing out for close to about 15 years now. And so what you've had is not a case of, massive exuberance as you had condensed into 2 years, but what you're seeing is a slow grind over a 13-year period where investors are willing to grant a premium to tech companies because these companies are actually generating earnings. I think another way to kind of look at it is to say, back in 99, tech contributed, this is a sort of at an index level, contributed about 10% of the S&P 500 earnings, despite the significant market weight. Today, tech is contributing over 25% of the S&P 500 earnings. And with the consumer behavior that we're seeing now as a result of the pandemic, it's probably likely that contribution to S&P earnings is going to increase over the coming years. But this time there's a big contribution coming from earnings, which wasn't necessarily the case back in 99.
The one potential risk for that investors need to keep an eye on is regulation. We see some of the tech CEOs called back to Capitol Hill. This is going to be ongoing and it's probably going to play out over a period of time as regulators in Europe and the US sort of figure how to manage the dominance of these companies.
Yeah, look, I think regulation is certainly one that we, along with many others, flag as the biggest risk to the growth story in tech. But, as you know, Simon, the fact that everyone is talking about it means that to some extent, at least, that part of it would be in the price. But, I think what remains unknown for most investors is you know, how that regulation is going to pan out. You know, is it going to be in the form of restrictions in terms of how these businesses operate? Is it forced unbundling? Is it higher taxes? And each one of those will have a different impact. But also at the back of one's mind, it's worth keeping in mind that it's not a foregone conclusion, right? That that regulation hurts the incumbents. You know, in fact, if we look at many other industries that have seen a lot of increased regulation, that has actually had the effect of entrenching the position of the incumbents and actually helped them. And then you also raise the element of time. You know, to say, if you look at history again and look at some of the companies that have gone through onerous regulation, it took well over a decade for you to move from the place where they were dominating the market until they actually ended up getting some form of regulation. They, you know, we're not looking to regulate one, two companies. There's a whole big industry, and I think we're some way there, but not yet at the point where it is imminent. Even though I think over the long term, it's fair to say that there will be increased regulation.
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft took, as you say, literally a decade. But like your point, regulation risk is already in the price. Victor Mpunga, a research analyst, Old Mutual Wealth Private Clients, appreciate your time this morning. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website or the app. Podcast available every morning from 7 a.m. Massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Koldora, to you for listening, my guests, for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.